Master Imus's Transgression, written by Dan Abnett, read by Toby Longworth.
"I suppose,"
he sniffed,
"you'll get a lot of cases like mine."
The officer did not reply. In the 10 minutes since Master Imus had been received, the officer had made very few remarks, except to announce his credentials and ask a few general questions. Master Imus had presented himself, of his own volition, at the portico of the dark, unfriendly building late that afternoon. He had been invited to wait in an anteroom off the inner yard. The anteroom was cold and forlorn. The fretful fingers of individuals previously invited to wait there had marked the white plaster with a greasy patina, and pacing feet had worn the wooden floor. There were no windows, but light poked in through a trio of dingy filters. From outside, far away, Master Imus could hear the street noises of workers flooding home to their habs and their evening meals. Master Imus sat in one of the old wooden chairs provided. A clerk attended him first. The clerk led Master Imus through to a side office panelled in dark wood and sat him at a small desk. The clerk was hunched over with the weight of the stenogram built into his chest. He sat on a stool, handed Master Imus a form, and told him to read out the questions printed on it and answer them in his own words. As Master Imus spoke, haltingly at first, the clerk's bird-foot hands pecked the keys of the stenogram and recorded his comments. The stenogram clattered like an adding machine, a sound that made Master Imus feel exceptionally sad. When the form was completed, the clerk left the office and was replaced, after a few minutes, by a second clerk. The second clerk led Master Imus into a chamber that smelled of machine heat and was cluttered with banks of whirring cogitators. The second clerk examined Master Imus's papers and copied them on one of the cogitators. Several versions of Master Imus's biographical particulars flashed up on the multiple screens for a moment, and then faded into a dull green glow. This slow, silent dissolution of all he was seemed unpleasantly symbolic to Master Imus. He was taken back to the anteroom and left alone again. The daylight was ebbing. A small lamp had been lit in his absence. Master Imus waited for 20 minutes, and then the officer arrived. "Johann Imus?" the officer asked as he entered the room, reading from a data slate. Master Imus stood up.
"That's me, sir,"
he said. The officer was a tall, well-made man with dark hair. He was dressed, and this came as no surprise to Johann Imus, in black clothes and a black leather coat. The officer looked Master Imus up and down with unforthcoming eyes and announced his credentials with a cursory wave of his rosette. "You have been received for inspection. Follow me, please," he said. Master Imus followed him obediently. He followed him across the twilit yard, in through an archway, and up an endless flight of varnished stairs. The officer opened a door and ushered Master Imus into a small room. The room had a large ornamental fireplace that looked as if it had not seen a fire in centuries. A gilt clock ticked on the mantel. There was a rug on the wooden floor, and two plain chairs on either side of a desk. An armchair stood in one corner, a comfortable and friendly item of furniture that Master Imus never got to sit in. They took their seats on either side of the desk. "What is the nature of the crime you are confessing?" the officer asked, after studying the data slate for a few minutes.
"Not a crime as such,"
Master Imus replied hastily. "No?"
"A transgression. Yes, a transgression. That is a better word altogether."
"The nature of the transgression, then?"
"I have already explained this,"
Master Imus offered,
"to the clerk."
The officer scrolled back through the slate's files. "Have you borne false witness to this statement as I read it?"
"No, sir."
"Were you coerced, invited, or urged to make this report?"
"No, sir,"
Master Imus said.
"I have come here of my own volition. I said as much."
"That is noted here strenuously. You made that point several times during the preliminary examinations."
"I simply wanted it to be clear," said Master Imus. "I was persuaded to come here by my own conscience, nothing else."
The officer was silent for a moment. "You say you have been suborned by the ruinous powers, drawn into their evil, and set upon an unholy task?" Master Imus nodded.
"I suppose,"
he sniffed,
"you get a lot of cases like mine." "Everything must be held carefully to account," stated Johann Imus. "I am an indentured bookkeeper and a citizen of Imperial Hesperus, the latter an honour I hold even more dear than my work at Slosha and Daviov et Si. My father was keeper of books for Slotcher and Daviov, and his before him. My work, like theirs, involves the enumeration of company accounts, the allocation of funds, the scrutiny of audits, and the day-to-day upkeep of financial income and outgoings. I have held my post for 62 years and run a department of 18 underkeepers. No, I have no wife, no kin to speak of. My work is my life. Slotcher and Daviov, an illustrious auction house. Surely you've heard of it. Well, it maintains offices in the Garcelle Commercia, just off the place 14th Jaumier. In the main, we deal with antique furnishing, silks, samiter ware, brashine mannequins, and fine arts. The sale rooms are on Varsensen Street, beside the lifter depot. There are open fair sales every mains day, and specialist auctions every other sole day. Occasionally we hold irregular fetes for particular customers or particular treasures. Last Gorgon's Day we offered a list that included 8 small ooze-like busts by Sambriano Celci and a series of humaniques from the Jokero ruins on Tornish. No, sir, I am no connoisseur. My salary does not provide me with the funds to collect or speculate, but funds are my business. I am painstaking and exact in my work. I would never wish to cause Master Slosher or Master Daviov professional embarrassment by misplacing a decimal point or wrongly adding a column of figures. This is why I have come. I do not make mistakes. Ah, well, now you ask. We come to the meat of it, I suppose. Last Solday, I set out to review the quarterly accounts. The year-end looms, and the imperial tithe statements must be returned correctly. I found an error. Well, not an error so much as an aberration. Something that could not be accounted for. It was an idle annoyance at first, but the more I studied the pages of the ledger, the more peculiar it became. There was a void, you see. A void, a gap or empty place in the flow of the accounts that defied explanation. It was as if a page or two were missing from my ledger. No, not at all. This was the master ledger. Only I had access to it. Sir, you belittle my craft with such a question. I keep books, and I have kept books my whole life. I am a creature of accuracy. It was not simply a matter of a creeping error, a stray subtotal. There were figures missing. Simply missing. And yet, a page or two on, the books balanced, seamlessly, as if there had been no hole. This is what I mean by the word void. Numbers are my language, my life. I know when they are lying. There was a void in the accounts, and the more I struggled to identify it, the more the figures hid it from me. It was as if they were closing ranks to conceal the truth. Why have I come to you with a bookkeeping error? Sir, again, you mock me. It was no error. I reviewed and recalculated. I redid the accounts 8 times. As I added to this column and subtracted from that, the numbers began to betray me. They became numbers that I did not understand. Sir, I believe I have calculated something that should not be. I believe I have found the number of ruin.
He regarded Master Johann Imus for a moment. Such a small man, shriveled by age, his sparrow bones lost in heavy robes that had evidently been cut to fit his father or his grandfather. The gilt clock ticked on the mantel. Its face had no hands, a simple ordo trick. The constant measured ticking was all that mattered. Tock, 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 flicking time away without a trace of its passage on the enamelled face. Guilt got them all in the end. Imus possessed a small, neat face with a wide, slit mouth that might have revealed a toothy grin had the circumstances been different. His hair was straggly and white, and he wore half-moon eyeglasses. His knuckles bulged with arthritis. "The number of ruin?" asked the officer. Imus nodded.
"That is my transgression. Will it be painless?"
"Will what be painless?" Imus struggled.
"My punishment. I presume, well, censure is inadequate. Will it be burning? Poison?"
The officer had been making notes in a small copybook. He dipped his pen into the desk's power well. "Do you believe you have committed a crime, sir?" he asked.
"No. No, not at all. But I believe I have become a crime. I am a criminal thing."
"I see." Master Imus sat forwards and adjusted his eyeglasses.
"I see you are quite a young man, sir. Will this have to go to a superior?"
"My superior?"
"Yes, sir. I imagine something this grave."
"My master's name is Hapshant. He is indisposed, an old ailment. I hold the rank of interrogator, as I told you. I can deal with this matter."
"Oh, good. That's good. Very good. So, how will you proceed?"
The officer stared at Master Imus. "Forgive me, Imus. You don't seem alarmed at all by this process."
"Alarmed?"
Imus echoed.
"Of course I'm alarmed. I'm terrified. I've been terrified of this day all my life."
"Why?"
"Because it happens to us all, sooner or later, doesn't it? Every day of my working life I have walked to work up Sarum Street and come by this place, so dark and unfriendly. I never pass it without a shudder. It is mortality. It is the face that awaits us all should we cross the line. Do you think it was easy coming here today? No, sir. It has taken me a week to find the confidence. This afternoon, as I raised my hand to rap at the door, my courage almost fled. But I am a true citizen of Imperial Hesperus. I am a true son of the Emperor. It was my duty to report this, no matter what fate awaits me."
The officer nodded. The clock ticked. "Tell me what you understand by the number of ruin," said the officer. Master Imus sat back and shrugged.
"It is an impossible number. An abomination. It is a notation of filthy power. Numbers own power, you see. My father raised me to respect 3 and 7, 13 and the 666, the primes, the constants, but the number of ruin, that is the number of...
Of
the warp,"
Imus whispered, looking to one side and then the other, as if in fear of being overheard. The officer nodded his head. "So Hapshant has taught me. Can you show me the number? Can you write it down?"
"Are you mad?"
"This room is warded and I am armed. Can you show me the number?" Master Imus took a data slate from his robe pocket. It was battered and worn from use. He activated it and entered a series of digits into the display.
"There are the accounts," he said, pausing before handing the slate over. "I have selected the key section. Please be careful."
The officer held out his hand. "Show it to me, please, sir." Master Imus hesitated.
"What did you say your name was, young man?"
"Eisenhorn," the officer replied. "Interrogator Eisenhorn of the Emperor's Holy Ordos." "Why?"
"Please be careful with this, Interrogator Eisenhorn."
Master Imus handed the old data slate to the officer. The officer looked at the screen with a slight frown. The gilt clock stopped ticking. A strange silence filled the room. "I—" the officer began to say, and caught fire. Blue flames, as hot as a burner torch, consumed his skin and roasted the flesh off his bones until nothing remained except dripping, blackened meat and a charred skull wrenched into a rictus by heat-tightened sinews. The data slate dropped onto the desk from a smoking, skeletal hand with a thump. The officer's clothing was untouched. The flames gutted out, and the scorched corpse slumped forward with a crack of dry ligaments. Imus got up and backed away. His eyes were wide. He fought back a terrible desire to urinate.
"Someone,"
he murmured.
"Someone, anyone, help me."
He reached the door and tried to open it, but it was locked. He knocked on it gingerly, as if hoping someone on the other side might open it without being put to too much trouble. A hand took his arm. "Please sit down, Master Imus," the officer said. Master Imus started rather badly and recoiled with such surprise he banged his elbows and the back of his head against the door. The officer, who was not burned in any way, was standing in front of him. "Master Imus?" Master Imus began to shake, Then he started to hiccup. He continued to stare at the officer. "What did you see?" the officer asked.
"You were on fire," replied Master Imus.
"You caught fire. The fire burned you until you were dead."
"Master Imus?" Johann Imus repeated his previous commentary, this time forcing his voice to actually make some sounds. "Ah," said the officer, "an illusion, that's all. Necessary to the work."
"Necessary?"
asked Master Imus.
"Necessary how? To what work?"
"To my work." The officer gestured towards the chair Imus had vacated. He paused. His tone became more sympathetic. "I apologize. I have shaken you, haven't I?" Master Imus shrugged and managed a small, dry laugh.
"Indeed. I have never seen a man combust before. I have never even seen a man die. How was the illusion done? What was the point of frightening me?"
The officer's sympathetic air melted. "I'm not about to answer any questions, sir. All the questions will be mine." There were a great many of them. They came at Master Imus so rapidly he became rather flustered. The officer asked him the names of his parents and his votation numeral, and inquired of his political leanings. He asked Master Imus to account for his whereabouts on certain dates stretching back 2 years. He asked if Master Imus could operate a cogitator, if he held keys to the auction house premises, if he had ever been off-world, and where his family originated from. Master Imus attempted to answer as best he could. Sometimes a new question came at him before the last answer had been completely recited. "Is there a record of public misdemeanors in your family? How long have you resided at your current address? Can you detail your diet in general terms? Are you receiving Medicaid treatment for any ailment? Have you ever been to Auselberg? How many languages do you speak? How many languages do you read? Do you dream? What do you dream about? How often do you attend Templum services? Have you ever taken the standard Psychana test? Have you ever been in trouble before?"
"Am I in trouble now?"
asked Master Imus. He was made to wait in the anteroom again. Night had fallen. The lamp, almost out of Prometheum, fluttered valiantly. The officer came to get him and led him out into the street. The evening was warm and humid. Master Imus could smell the roasting and poaching and frying underway in the kitchens of the local eating houses. A few pedestrians passed by along the pavement under the street lamps.
"Where are we going?"
Master Imus asked. "What did I tell you about questions?" the officer asked. Master Imus pursed his lips and shrugged. Two men joined them from the dark building. One was an old, shuffling being in long, dark robes. The other was a young man, of an age and mode of dress that matched the officer's. This man was more handsome, however, more genial in his countenance. "Is this the fellow?" he asked. The officer nodded. "Let's process this, Gregor," the man requested. "I had plans for tonight." They walked down the street. The officer and the other young man walked on either side of Master Imus, like an escort of jailers walking a convict to the scaffold. The old hunched man followed them. "We will inspect your hab," the officer said.
"Of course," said Master Imus. "It's not far."
Master Imus took out his keys and opened the deadbolts of his door one by one. A baby was crying loudly on the floor below, and the stairwell was pungent with the odor of steamed cabbage. Mistress Elva, from down the landing, came out and made a point of sweeping her front step so she could get a good look at the dark men Master Imus had brought home with him. As Master Imus finished the business of unlocking, the officer's companion turned to look at Mistress Elva. "Are these your eyes, good wife?" he called. "I found them in the back of my head." Mistress Elva bridled and went inside. The young man laughed. "Don't start, Titus," the officer said. The other man leaned against the wall. "Lousy old bitch," he remarked.
48,
said the old man, lurking behind them. 48 what? Asked the officer, turning.
"Steps. 2 flights of 24. Esquire spruce, not local. Vitrian glass in the lamp housings, though some of them have been replaced by cheaper alternatives."
"And this is pertinent how?" inquired the young man called Titus. The old man shrugged with a bionic hiss.
"Oh, it's not."
Master Imus opened the door. He felt rather ashamed of the musty smell that breathed out of the doorway. The officer produced a docket. "Sign this," he told Master Imus.
"What is it?"
"A waiver. Interrogator Endor and I are about to search your residence." Master Imus initialed the docket. The two interrogators entered the hab. Master Imus followed them, and the old man shuffled in behind him. The old man sniffed.
"Sec vinegar," he said.
"What?"
asked Master Imus.
"Sec vinegar and cayleaf."
"I use the vinegar to clean my fingers," said Master Imus. "It's the only thing that gets the ink out."
"The only thing that gets the ink out," the old man repeated.
"And I use cayleaf in a paste to re-grind my quills."
"You don't smoke it, then?" asked the old man.
"Smoke it? Why?"
"As a balm against rheumatic inflammation."
"No."
"Ah,"
the old man said. He shuffled forwards into the living room, his legs creaking like a servitor's. He was terribly hunched, and his augmetic eyewear clicked as it hunted.
"You should. It's very medicinal. It would help your hip."
"My hip?"
asked Master Imus.
"You walk with a slight counter-rotation, 2 centimeters short on each right step. You shuffle, sir. I presume it is rheumatism."
Master Imus felt quite dismayed. These three men had intruded into his home. The officer was in his bedroom, overturning the mattress. The other man, Endor, was in the little side kitchen, sniffing the contents of various jars. No one had been inside Master Imus's hab for years. It felt like a violation.
"Are you the Inquisitor?"
Master Imus asked.
"Me? Bless you, no," replied the old man. "Why would you think that?"
"I just assumed."
The old man shuffled over to the sideboard.
"Fuse fit samp wood. No maker's mark. A vase."
He picked the vase up.
"Please be careful,"
Master Imus said. The old man ignored him. He held the vase in his spindly fingers.
"Samiterware, 3rd dynasty.
He looked inside it.
"Oh, paper clips."
The officer came back from the bedroom, holding several books. "You have books," he said.
"Is there something wrong with that?"
asked Master Imus. "You like poetry?"
"The early imperials, the Tacits. Is that a crime?"
"This is," said Endor. He walked in from the side kitchen with something in his hand. There was an ugly, almost triumphant grin on his face. Master Imus realized that what he first registered as handsome in the features of the officer's companion was, in fact, a cruel arrogance. Interrogator Endor was accustomed to winning. "What is it?" asked the officer. "Buried at the bottom of a jar of caffeine," Endor replied. He held out his hand. 6 little pills lay in his palm. "Yellows," he said.
"Most perturbatory," said the old man.
"They're not mine,"
said Master Imus. Master Imus sat on the threadbare couch, tugging at his robe.
"They're not mine. Not mine, not at all. I don't use that sort of thing. I wouldn't even know how to get that sort of thing."
"Zespair Street, or the dealers that frequent the depot," said the old man.
"Be quiet, Amos," said the officer. He stared down at Master Imus. "This is a bad turn of events for you. It compounds things."
"They're not mine. How many times do I have to say it?"
"They were in your kitchen," said Endor, who seemed to be relishing Master Imus's discomfort.
"I didn't put them there."
"Oh, so someone just came in and hid them in your caffeine, did they?"
"That must be it. I can think of no other explanation."
"I've had enough. Let's process him." "Slow down, Titus," said the officer.
"He's up to his ears in it."
"Slow down," I said.
"I had plans for tonight," Titus Endor scowled.
"Fantastic for you. Give me the tablets." Endor tipped the yellows into the officer's hand. The officer sat down on the couch next to Master Imus. "Get lost," he told his companions. Endor went out onto the landing to smoke a low stick. The old man shuffled away to examine the books in the bedroom. "I'll be frank. This is going badly for you, sir," the officer explained to Master Imus.
"I realize that."
"The matter of the accounts is the main thing, but the yellows, they complicate the matter."
"I understand."
"They are a prohibited substance, that's the first thing. The second thing is, they're yellowed."
"I don't know what you mean,"
said Master Imus. "This isn't the first time I've inspected an individual's hab and found evidence of drug use. Obscura, gladstones, that sort of business. But yellowed, they're mind expanders. We typically find them in circumstances connected to cult activity."
"Cult?"
"We often find them used in association with prohibited texts and deviant knowledge. A man who has the number of ruin might use yellows to help him fathom it and master its use." Master Imus put his head in his hands.
"They're not mine."
"Is the Ursaka yours?"
"The what?"
"I found it between the Frobisher and the early Tacits in your bedroom."
I don't know what an Ursaka is. I don't know its significance.
It's a prescribed text. It defines the methodological use of psychotropic drugs in gnomic enlightenment. So that was just placed there too, was it? Someone just put it there?
They must have done.
The officer sighed. Master Imus, you've brought a matter to our attention. A serious matter. The numbers you showed me in the ledger are quite pernicious.
And I came of my own volition. Remember that?
I do, and that leaves me with two possibilities. You are a practicing heretic with a pathological desire to be caught and condemned.
Or?
Or, Master Imus, you have been set up to take the fall for someone. There's one last thing I would like to do. It's necessary for my work.
What is it, sir?
Asked Master Imus. The officer turned to look at him. His face was no longer human. It was a snout of rancid, gnashing teeth, spatulate and broad, with sharp edges. The snout opened, drooling spit, and seemed about to bite Master Imus's face clean off. Master Johann Imus smelled the pit stink of the warp and the shadows of dark places where no human ever willingly walked. He saw a monstrous horror lunging at him, pallid tentacles whipping up out of the distended throat. He cried out in fear and wet himself. "I'm sorry I had to do that, Master Imus," said the officer, wiping his mouth. Titus Endor came in from the stairhead.
"Thrown, Gregor. I felt that.
Sorry. Would you and Amos please stay here and tidy the place? And help Master Imus to get cleaned up?"
"I had plans for tonight," replied Endor.
"And now I have plans of my own," said the officer. Titus Endor stayed until midnight, and then made some vague excuse and left. The old man remained with Master Imus until dawn. They played regicide and talked of antiques. The officer returned at first light.
"The matter is settled," he said. "Thank you for your cooperation."
When Master Imus went to work the next day, he found that Slosha and Daviov et C. had been closed down, with immediate effect and until further notice, the seal on the door said. Most of the staff had gathered in the street, bewildered and despondent.
"Master Slosha was shot," muttered one of the underkeepers.
"He was shot last night by the Inquisition," another confirmed.
"Oh, dear,"
said Master Imus. 3 days later, the officer called on Master Imus at his hab.
"Won't you sit down, sir?"
invited Master Imus. "I've come to tell you that you've been formally cleared of all charges," the officer said.
"Even my transgression?"
"Even that."
"I'm very relieved,"
said Master Imus. "Your employer was conducting bad business, heretical business, in fact. He was engaged in the importation of illicit texts under the cover of the auction house's primary dealings. We'd been after him for a year. We had no proof of his activities."
"I see."
"Your employer knew we were on to him, of course. He set you up to act as a distraction. He wanted us to concentrate on you instead of him. And we would have, if you hadn't been so honest as to bring the matter to our attention."
"Did you kill Master Slosha?"
asked Johann Imus. "I'm afraid I did." The officer rose. "Well, I must be on my way."
"What happens now?"
asked Master Imus. "What do you mean?"
"I have no job to go to. The auction house is finished. What will become of me?"
"I'm sorry, sir. That's not my problem." The officer turned to leave.
"I think I might be allowed to ask one question, in all fairness,"
said Master Imus. "Ask it."
"Why was it necessary?"
"Why was what necessary?" asked the officer.
"Why was it necessary to scare me?"
"Fear simplifies the mind, Master Imus. It is so strong and pure. It quite empties the head and removes all barriers and falsehoods. I scared you so I could read the truth inside you, the honest part of you that you could not dissemble. I'm sorry about that."
"You're a psyker, then?"
Master Imus asked.
"Yes."
"Ah, I see. If you can read into the future, tell me. I have no job and no references. I am too old and set in my ways to retrain. I have no means of support. I came forward of my own free volition, helped you hunt out a heretic and proved my innocence, and I am left the poorer for it. What do I do now?"
"I'm a mind reader, not a clairvoyant."
"Right. Thank you for your candor anyway."
"Goodbye, Master Imus." Interrogator Eisenhorn closed the door behind him. Master Imus sat on the threadbare couch. From the floor below, he could hear a baby crying. He could hear the knock of the landlord, going from hab to hab for the week's rent. Master Imus's rent dues were in the sideboard drawer, this week's and the next's, but nothing more. Master Imus was glad he had come forward, and glad he had spoken out. Duty was duty, after all. He tried to inflate some sense of civic pride in his heart. But he wished, more than anything, he had just kept himself to himself. That was Master Imus's Transgression, written by Dan Abnett, read by Toby Longworth.